Case number 22-3017, United States of America versus John Gamble, appellant. Mr. Axon for the appellant, Ms. Gallo for the appellee.
Good morning, counsel. Morning. Mr. Axon, please proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel, Tony Axon on behalf of appellant Johnny Gamble. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Appellant Johnny Gamble was seized when 6 armed officers in tactical gear came upon him quickly at night in a limited area of sidewalk and singled him out. Specifically, Officer Tejada singled him out. The specific moments of seizure were first when Officer Tejada positioned himself to stop Mr. Gamble's movement away from the officers. Second, when Officer Tejada announced, "Just making sure there ain't no guns, that's it," and then asked Mr. Gamble if he had a gun. This accomplished 2 purposes. It accused Mr. Gamble of a crime and suggested that Mr. Gamble needed to remain in place to dispel the officer's accusations. And the third moment of seizure was when Mr. Gamble said that he did not have a gun and Officer Tejada said, "Let me see your waist."
So you want us to hold that he was seized when Tejada walks up to him and singles him out before he even utters a word? That's a seizure?
In this case, there was a seizure at that point. And I will say that in general, when an officer approaches someone and doesn't utter a word, there is a seizure. But in this case, Mr. Gamble was backing away with his hands up and Officer Tejada came and stood in his path. So I would say to the court, yes, if an officer walks up to someone and stands in the path, their path of movement, that officer is conveying without words that I want you to stop. Mr. Gamble did stop.
What was Officer Tejada supposed to do that would have been compliant with the Fourth Amendment?
Well, this court has suggested that officers come up if it's a consensual encounter, make it consensual, come up and say, "Hi, we're out here. We're investigating this. Would you mind talking to us? You are free to go about your way if you do not want to talk to us." None of that occurred. This was immediately like multiple officers descending at once in tactical gear at night. The atmospherics of the situation did not convey a consensual encounter. They conveyed the exact opposite, a coercive encounter that everyone there should comply with.
Let's zero in on the moment that Officer Tejada says, "Let me see your waist." The government says that that's not a seizure at that point. What's your best case or cases that it was a seizure at that point?
Well, this court's case in the United States v. Wood, where an officer arrives at a location and sees someone walking away and says, "Stop, freeze," and the person stops and freezes and immediately drops the gun. The command itself was a show of authority, and when the person stopped, that was submission to the authority, and this court found that that was a seizure. There are other cases as well.
We've also said that the question, "Can I see your waistband," does not demonstrate a seizure. And I think we said that in Gross. And so we could take that as a given, at least for now, that a request, "Can I see your waistband," would not establish a seizure. And so I guess my question is, can the words, "Let me see your waistband," can they ever be a question? If they're said very politely, if just leave off the, "Can you let me see your waistband?" If it's just, "Let me see your waistband," can they be a question?
No, there's always an imbalance of power between officers in uniform and certainly in this situation, but let's just say an officer in uniform, an officer.
But even if there's an imbalance.
Words have meaning. I mean,
Even if there's an imbalance in power, it's true that notwithstanding that imbalance in power, the words, could I see a waistband, are not indicative of a seizure.
A question this court has held is not indicative of a seizure. It is not necessarily a seizure. Right. I don't think the court has gone so far as to say questions are never a seizure.
Right. It doesn't have to be a seizure.
But this is not a question. And
can it never be a question? Can it work?
A command, I'd have to say, a command by a police officer, given the imbalance in power, it's logical that we want people to obey commands by police officers. And if a command is not a show of authority, which somebody has to comply with.
I might agree with you that if it's a command, then it shows a seizure. I guess my question is, there's a question or request on one hand and a command on the other hand. And words, it seems to me there are words that could be either. It could be a command, it could be a question. You just have to look and listen and figure out in context, was it framed as a question or was it framed as a command?
Well, I think the Supreme Court has said that tone, it's the tone of the officers are the words chosen. And words chosen, again, have to have meaning. Mm-hmm. Something that began with, if the officer was, if this was a consensual encounter and my client was free to resist the command, then it's a very simple thing for the officer to say, may I see your waistband? That is not what occurred. It's a very simple thing to add the could, can. Again, the language has to have meaning, and a declarative statement or command is simply never a question.
Here's how the district court characterized it at JA-175. He says, and at that point, he specifically tells the defendant, and it wasn't a hostile tone of voice, but he clearly makes a demand, show me your waist. So what do we do with that?
Well,
you're not saying that any of that, but to the extent that's a factual finding, is clear error, right?
No, I don't think
the government argues that that's clear error either. Right?
I don't take issue with either the finding that it's a demand or that the tone is nice, but saying things nicely doesn't change that that you are requiring someone to do something.
Mr. Axum, if we assume that it was a demand and the first time the officer demanded that Gamble show his waistband was a show of authority, and then we assume that the seizure occurred when he actually raised his shirt and showed his waistband, it seems to me that there were three factual findings in the record that could amount to reasonable suspicion that would support that seizure. First, there's a finding that we're in a high crime area, quote, specifically related to gun possession, both violent and nonviolent related gun matters. That's the first one. Second, the court found it was, quote, unusual when Gamble backed away with his hands up in response to the police arrival. And the court did say that that could be consistent with consciousness of guilt, I'm paraphrasing here, but said that that's subject to other interpretations as well. But third and most importantly, the court said it was, quote unquote, suspicious when Gamble did not immediately comply with the directive, but instead pulled up his pants and, quote, was seeking to try and actually conceal his waistband, which occurred here. So those three findings of fact, which nobody is saying were clearly erroneous, why don't those add up to reasonable suspicion that would support a seizure? When at that point of seizure, when he raised his shirt?
Well, the first thing I'd say about the neighborhood and the high crime designation, that's just a contextual matter. And the court certainly had to look at the circumstances of this case, decide whether.
But the Supreme Court has held in Wardlow that that's a factor in finding reasonable suspicion.
It's certainly a factor.
So that's one factor, and then there's two more.
But the question is how do the facts of this case, how are they influenced by the high crime designation, we'll call it? Slowly backing away does not become a crime because you're in a high crime area.
It's not a crime, but the court found that it was unusual and is consistent with.
Well, that would place him in a double bind. If he has the right to walk away, it can't be that then walking away is a basis for reasonable suspicion. The Supreme Court has also said that defendants have the right to walk away when police arrive at a scene. They don't have to stay and talk or do anything. So for that to be a factor of I can't say that it's never a factor in the reasonable suspicion analysis, but it's not significant here. I'd say that it is entitled to very little, if any, weight under these circumstances.
I think in all of these Fourth Amendment analyses, there's behavior that could be innocent in some contexts, but could be construed as suspicious in others. I think that that's just a normal part of this analysis. And here the court said, it could be construed in different ways. It could be construed as suspicious behavior, trying to suggest that he hadn't done anything when in fact he did. Because I think it's unusual just because the police arrive on the scene and somebody backs away from them. And not just backs away, like he doesn't want to have contact with them, but also is raising his hands in a manner that would suggest or could suggest that he was trying to conceal the fact that he was involved in criminal behavior. Although it could be construed otherwise as well. So that's a finding by the district court.
I fully appreciate that. There is no explanation. The government didn't elicit from Officer Tejada what crime backing away signified. And really that gets to the heart of it, because backing away is an innocent act. So if it is suspicious, what is it suspicious of? General suspicion, general hunches are not sufficient for reasonable suspicion. General hunches don't allow the police because something looks odd or something looks strange. There are many things that look odd and strange, and officers don't have the right to stop someone to investigate that further. What officers have to do is to articulate how that odd or strange behavior is criminal. And backing away on this, In this very case, no one has explained how backing away is criminal.
And so can you address the third factor, which was that he tried to actually conceal his waste?
The first thing that I would say about tried to conceal his waste is that's a very subjective finding. It's what the officer said. It seemed to him that maybe he was trying to conceal his waste. But one, there is no concealment. His waste was not concealed.
So you're saying the finding by the district court is clearly erroneous? Seems that you're conceding it was supported by the testimony of the officer.
The finding that the defendant was trying to do something?
He's trying to conceal his waste. But the
trying to conceal
said.
His waste is different from concealing his waste. I'm making a distinction between those two things. Concealing waste is an objective fact that this court could review and determine, was his waste concealed? Did he do something to obstruct the officer from seeing his waste as the officer, again, ordered him to lift his clothes and show his waste?
I'll give government counsel a preview of one of the questions I'll have for her, but isn't the more salient point that the demand was made before that happened? So how can that factor in as reasonable suspicion for let me see your waste when he doesn't do that until after that statement?
I would say yes. At that point, he's already been seized. The officer does not, or I should say, at that point, the officer did not have reasonable suspicion and had made a demand.
So what's the point of seizure?
The point of seizure is obviously when there's submission.
Which is when he lifted his shirt.
At the moment he begins to submit. And if you look at Government Exhibit 1, they refer to it as pulling up his pants, but it's an adjustment of his waist. And the officer gives an explanation for that. He says, the pants are sagging. That is a logical, innocent explanation. He doesn't say because there's a crime.
But how is that a submission to the show of authority? If the show of authority was show me your waistband and you're not showing the waistband, you're instead adjusting your pants. That's not the point of seizure.
I would take strong disagreement that you're not showing your waistband. It was all one movement. He lifted his pants.
It's the district court that held that he was concealing his waistband at that point. The point of seizure is when he lifts his shirt.
If
the concealing happened before that, that goes to reasonable suspicion.
I have to take disagreement that the court found that he was concealing. There is no finding that something was concealed. Trying to conceal and conceal, there is a distinction. Trying to conceal is an assessment of what the defendant is trying to do. And concealing is, from the officer's perspective, I could not see his waist. There is no testimony, there is no finding that there was any concealment in this case. So as the client, in fact, Mr. Gamble lifts his clothes above his belly button. The officer, again, gives an explanation for why he has adjusted his waist. And the explanation is because his pants are sagging because he's not wearing a belt.
Can you address what the court should do if we find that the seizure does not occur until he lifts his shirt? Is there a case that says we assess reasonable articulable suspicion based on everything that happened before the submission to authority? Or do we assess reasonable articulable suspicion as to what the officer knew at the time he made the demand? Is there a case that answers that question?
I don't think there's a case that answers that question.
What about Hodari D? Hodari D is the case where the youth is running.
Yes.
And there was no reasonable suspicion from before he was running. And then he throws an object and then he's seized. And the Supreme Court held that the throwing of the object counts in deciding whether there was reasonable suspicion because he didn't submit until they actually caught him. Isn't that exactly on point?
No, it's not exactly on point because Hodari D is a case of direct defiance of the officer's command. It is not doing something else in addition to complying with the officer's command. And here you have on the way.
Do you have any authority that distinguishes Hodari D from the situation? Is there a case about doing something?
I don't have a case, but I think the facts of Hodari D make clear that there is a command, a show of authority, and then headlong flight away. Clear defiance, clear obstruction, clear non-compliance with the command.
The Supreme Court didn't phrase it that way. They just said the moment of seizure is when he submits to the show of authority.
That's correct.
That's the standard.
That's correct. So if it begins at the moment of submission, the second that Mr. Gamble brings his hands down to submit, to comply with what I'm not saying that under the formulation the court is suggesting, any deviation, minor deviation from 100% compliance would be non-compliance, would be a lack of submission. And that's not what occurred here. It wasn't even 1 second of him adjusting his waist as he lifted his clothes. It was on the way, lifting his pants. I'd say it was all one movement. So submission is as he says in his mind, I am going to do what the officer says. I am pulling my hands down. And because my pants are hanging low, I adjust them and lift my clothes. So the submission begins as he brings his hands down. That's what I would say. If we're going to have to pinpoint that degree of precision, there was submission before he adjusted his pants. Adjusting his pants did not interfere with the officer's observation in any way. The officer, even closer to the end of the hearing, didn't identify adjusting his pants as a a basis for the stop at all. The officer said it was the backing away and the cell phone in his hand.
Make sure there's no additional questions for you at this time, Mr. Aston. We'll give you a little time for rebuttal. Hear from the government now. Ms. Kalu.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. Chinyamso Kalu on behalf of the United States. Your honors, we're asking the court here to affirm the district court's judgment in this case. The district court did not err in denying Mr. Gamble's motion to suppress because the evidence that came in during the hearing establishes that there was no seizure prior to the second time that Mr. Gamble.
So can I ask you about the first time, though? So the first time is, let me see your waistband. And that's the first one that the district court called a demand on page 175, as Judge Wilkins pointed out. But he clearly makes a demand. And then on page 180, he did make several demands of him to show his waistband. So if it's a demand is something that can't be said no to. It can't be declined. If it's a demand, how is it not a seizure?
Something that the Your Honor brought up when Mr. Axon was arguing is that, and under this court's case law, similar questions, can I see your waistband, have been held to not.
But that's a question. I mean, I guess to me, the thing is, and your brief says, uses the word request a few times. And I totally get that, because I'll tell you, if you watch the video and you listen to what's said, I think somebody could look at that and say the words are a question. Somebody could look at that and say the words are a demand. But it seems to me that a lot turns on whether one construes those words as a question on one hand or a demand on the other hand. And once, let's just play out the scenario where it's a demand as opposed to a question, because I'm viewing those to be different. If it's a demand, how can it be that there's not a seizure? Because the definition of a demand is that this is something that you have to comply with. And if it's something that you have to comply with, it seems to me you're necessarily seized.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because I think that Judge Pan raised this in some of her questions. There's no seizure until the suspect has submitted to the show of authority.
That, I have to say, if that's true, then that would mean that if an officer tells a subject, you need to and with no suspicion whatsoever, just walks up to a random person on the street and said, you're going to have to show me what's inside that bag. And the person resists and says, I don't even know, I'd rather not. You're going to have to show me what's inside that bag. And then he opens the bag and there's something in there. It can't be that the submission didn't occur until he shows what's inside the bag. And therefore, it's okay to demand that the contents of the bag be shown. That just turns the Fourth Amendment on its head, right? So it can't be that the submission happens at the time that you reveal the very thing that the officer demanded that you reveal.
I think that would certainly be, that's certainly not the fact that we have here. What we have here, as counsel conceded, was that Mr. Gamble started adjusting his pants. And contrary to what he said, there is testimony in the record from the officer that adjustment of the pants, this is at page 71 of the JA, that the officer understood that movement as an attempt to conceal something from him, and he did that before he complied with the command, which was, if we're going to call it a command, you know, for the right, purposes just for, of the question,
yeah,
to lift his waistband. And so I would argue that it's not until that point, when he actually does lift up his shirt, that he potentially has been seized. And I don't think that, I'm not arguing that it would never be that some walking up to somebody and saying, let me see your waistband would never be, that would never result in a seizure. But rather, that's not what we have here for a number of different reasons. Some of them related to the officer's interaction with Mr. Gamble, and some of those reasons related to the circumstances surrounding.
Before you get to that, what do we do with the district court saying he clearly makes a demand, show me your waist? Isn't that a factual finding?
think I've answered that two parts of that answer. The first, certainly the court was ruling from the bench, and the court was taking pains to distinguish this case from Mabry, where there were, this court, as I understand it, held in that case that it was the persistence of the questioning, not the, necessarily the question itself, that led to, or rather that transformed the consensual encounter into a seizure. And the second part of that, my answer to that question, Your Honor, is that it's not just the words that are used, but also the tone of voice. And another factual finding that Judge Walton made here was that the officer's tone of voice was not hostile.
But you're not answering my question. If the first part of the sentence, it wasn't a hostile tone of voice, is a factual finding, because you like that, isn't the next part of the sentence where he says, but he clearly makes a demand, show me your waist, isn't that also a factual finding?
I think that was what I was attempting to say, yes, but that I think it's important to keep in mind that the court was...
So the district court made a factual finding that there was a demand to show me your ways.
I mean, that is what the district court said.
But you're not saying that that's clear error. I didn't see that in your brief.
We referred to the clear error standard.
Did you ever argue in your brief that the finding that show me your waist or lift up your shirt, let me see your waistband, the finding that was in fact a demand was clear error? Is that in your brief?
Oh, I see what you're saying. We did not argue that in the brief, Your Honor. But what I would say is that demands could be under, we would argue they could be, should be understood on a spectrum. If a police officer walked up to somebody and said, you know, in a hostile tone of voice, for example, get on the ground, or said to somebody in an urgent tone of voice, move out of the way, those are different, there's a different result from those.
I guess I don't know, I'm not following the spectrum once you were in, once either of the endpoints is a demand, because even a polite demand, it could be the politest demand ever. It could be, listen, I hate to bother you, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to need you to show me your waistband. And suppose the person whose approach says, I'd actually rather not, is that okay if I don't? No, look, I mean, this is a demand. It's a very polite demand, but it's a demand. You're going to need to show me your waistband. Isn't it? That's a seizure.
But I think the facts that the court described in that hypothetical, there's repetition with the questioning, which is something that this court focused on in Mabry. Certainly the court can see in Government's Exhibit 1 that's in the record in this case, the nature of the officer.
So one demand isn't enough. It's got to be two. That's what we should write.
I think that is in large part what this court did write in Mabry. There's reference to the persistence of the questioning, and that is something that Judge...
But that's because persistence of questioning can turn the words into a demand. But if the words are a demand in the first place, I don't know how it can be that something's a demand and there's an option. The whole point of a demand is there's not an option. If there's not an option, then there's a seizure.
So assuming it is a demand and it is a seizure, was there reasonable articulable suspicion to support seizure?
We think that there was reasonable articulable suspicion to support the seizure because Mr. Gamble did not submit until... we're talking with respect to the first... Until he has... submitted to the officer's show of authority, there was not a seizure. And the finding that the district court made was that, because of that, we'll finish the answer, I'm sorry. Because of that, what the officer could see or knew at the time, there's that it's in a high crime area. And I agree, backing away, not enough on its own for reasonable suspicion, but it is what the officer testified to, and I believe what the court found, that was enough in this situation to bring the officer's attention to Mr. Gamble because he was the only one that was backing away. So that just added to what was happening. And then trying to conceal, the act of trying to conceal something, Your Honor.
Why do we count even if we credit that it was an act of trying to conceal by adjusting his waist before he pulls up his shirt? Why does that get to be added to the reasonable articulable suspicion calculus when the officer didn't know that because it hadn't happened yet when he made the demand?
And just because he had not submitted yet.
I find that notion pretty darn puzzling, I have to say, because then officer can come in full guns blazing and it can be the most emphatic command ever. Suppose, you know, show me what's in your bag. You got to show me what's in your bag right now. And then the person is nervous and tries to put the bag behind their back. So, boy, and then you say, well, you're trying to conceal the bag. That's reasonable suspicion. Now open the bag. It can't be that. The fact that you've created reasonable suspicion by trying to conceal the bag in the face of a demand for which there was no reasonable articulable suspicion itself creates reasonable articulable suspicion to look inside the bag, can it?
It is. I guess it's just the fact that, well, if we're assuming that it's a demand, you know, those are all of the factors, you know, that the high crime area, the unusualness of him backing up with his arms up, the adjusting of the pants, you know, that's the district court did not find that there was RAS until the second time that Mr. Gamble was asked.
Isn't the answer to Judge Srinivasan's question yes? I mean, the Supreme Court has held at the point of seizure is when there's a submission to a show of authority. And everything up until that point goes into the calculus for reasonable suspicion. That's the way the court has interpreted this. And isn't that what happened in Hodari D?
I would agree with Your Honor.
Really? So that the government's position, I want to make sure I understand this. The government's position is that an officer gets to come up to a subject and just bring down holy rain terror. And then the way the person reacts itself creates suspicion. That's just, what's the point of the Fourth Amendment if you just get to walk up to somebody and impose what everybody would agree is an emphatic demand and then say, boy, if you're nervous, that creates suspicion. That's kind of extraordinary, isn't it?
I would say what we are, the finding that we're defending here is Judge Walton's finding, but I agree with Judge Pan that this case is similar to Hodari D. And Your Honor, if I may, I just wanted to respond, going back to your questions about Mabry, the questions that were asked Mabry were, let me see your sack. There's the transcript of the questions laid out in the opinion. And so they are similar questions here. So I think when I say persistence of questioning, those were also demands, and the body-worn camera is on file in that case. And it is what happened in Mabry is quite different from this case. And I also would say
in Mabry, the camera is
the body-worn camera was submitted as part of the record in that case. If the court would like to compare, and we also would be happy to provide it if the court would be interested. But if the court is inclined to disagree with us, I hope that Your Honors will, if I may, I know I'm over time, to note that we would also argue that this case is distinguishable from Brody, which is, this is the third issue we brought up in our brief, and that, so we're not asking, to be clear, that this court overrule, we understand that that is not something that this panel could do. But we do think that the decision incentivizes people to, in interactions with police, submit or maybe briefly submit and then run and throw away weapons or contraband in a dangerous manner. And it's clear on Government's Exhibit 1 that's in the record in this case that when Mr. Gamble fled with the loaded firearm with one round in the chamber, he threw it against an apartment wall. It audibly hits the wall. You can hear that on the body-worn camera. Thankfully, the gun didn't go off. However, it could have gone off. And this, in getting ready for argument, I did go back and look at some of the documents in the district court docket. Government admittedly did not raise this particular argument at the suppression hearing, but did in its sentencing memorandum refer to the dangerous habit.
So, counsel, I find this alternative argument quite extraordinary because a person running and throwing a gun is a very common factor that we see over and over again. And as a trial judge, I saw it over and over again. And the government is taking the position that every time that happens, any Fourth Amendment violation that took place before running and throwing a gun is purged?
I think the position we're taking in this case is the way that Mr. Gamble fled in this case, throwing up a loaded firearm at a building so hard that...
So it has to be at a building.
I don't want to... I'm limiting it to the facts of this case because what we're arguing in this case, but I would say...
But the general principle is that you think the government is taking the position that if a suspect runs and throws a gun, anything that happened before that, any Fourth Amendment violation is purged.
I think it would depend, our positions, it would depend on the facts of the case. So if the manner of flight were shown to be dangerous. And that is something that this court did carve out in Brody, the manner of flight. Admittedly, generally, what the court was talking about leaving in a vehicle. But there are, you could imagine a situation where somebody in running tosses a gun perhaps onto grass or into a bush. Maybe that in and of itself is not dangerous. But if you then add that someone does that near a school, for example.
But then you're asking us to adopt a standard that depends on where the gun lands?
Not where. I think it would still be a totality of the circumstances. And now it's all part of the Fourth Amendment, totality of the circumstances, whether the manner of flight was dangerous. Manner of flight was dangerous.
Can I ask one question about the I just want to make sure that you did argue in the brief that if the first let me see your waistband, the second one was a little bit different, I guess, but the first statement that the district court deemed to be a demand, that even if that is a demand, there was still reasonable argument. Articulable suspicion by the time of the seizure.
Yeah.
You did argue that?
We argued that the district court did an error in finding that the second time, fixing the point of seizure at the second request was that the court did an error in doing that. So not make that argument in our
as to the first one, as to the first of those two statements.
Correct.
But with the second,
focusing on what the court found.
Yeah, by the time of the second statement, I take it your point is that by the time of the second statement, there was reasonable articulable suspicion, and there might well have been.
And we would point the court, in addition to the facts that we've been discussing, to Judge Walton's factual finding at 175 and 181 in the JA, that in viewing the body-worn camera, something was visible when Mr. Gamble lifted his jacket.
And I guess what's come up in argument today is the possibility that there might have been reasonable articulable suspicion that arose between the time of the first, what the district court called a demand, and the time of what the second of what the district court called a demand. And there would be a question as to whether that's a seizure had occurred by then because there had been no submission ostensibly to the demand.
Yes.
But our review is de novo, correct? Our review of whether a seizure occurred is de novo.
Yes. Yes. And if there are no further questions.
I think I want to just make sure that I understand your response to Chief Judge Srinivasan's question. Because I believe that appellant pretty clearly makes an argument in his brief that the seizure occurred earlier than the second let me see your waist statement, demand, question, whatever you want to call it. Did you argue in your brief, even if you find that the seizure occurred earlier after the first let me see your waist statement, demand, question, that there was reasonable particular suspicion at that point?
We did not argue that. We argued that the district court did not err in finding that seizure occurred at the second request. And we also went through each of the points of seizure that that Mr. Gamble is, the fact that the officers arrived in cars and were wearing uniform. And we went through each of those claims and discussed why there was no seizure at those points. If the court has no further questions.
I do have one further question, sorry, just to keep everybody just a little bit longer. So the statement by the district court twice calling the first let me see your waistband a demand, do you agree that that's a finding of fact?
Those are the words the court used. I think that in view of the fact that the court was distinguishing this case from Mabry, and that the language that is used in Mabry was so similar in the sense that it was phrased as let me see, that even if the court, this court, views that finding as the use of the word demand as a factual finding, that doesn't demand, no pun intended, that this court then say that there was a seizure when that first demand was made.
Okay, but you're not taking issue with the proposition that that was a finding of fact. In other words, I mean, I suppose one could try to argue that whether it's a demand or not is a conclusion. And we look at the historical facts on the ground to figure out whether it in fact constitutes a demand, the necessary upshot of which could be that there was a seizure.
It could be viewed as, to the extent that the court is, that the district court was characterizing that word is used to inform whether the district court was finding the police had made a show of authority, the conclusion about whether there was a show of authority necessary to trigger Fourth Amendment protections, then it could be viewed as a legal finding.
Okay.
So I think either way the court looks at it, that we would say that first demand was not a command that triggered the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, I think the show of authority part would be a conclusion of law. The question of whether it's a demand or not could be a factual predicate to whether there was a show of authority. The district judge did call it a demand on more than one occasion.
Yes.
Okay, let me make sure my colleagues don't have additional questions. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Axum, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
I'd first note that the government did not argue and the district court did not find that there was a seizure when Mr. Gamble first lifted his clothes. And we'd ask this court to find that in that regard, the government has not carried its burden to establish that there's reasonable articulable suspicion at the time of seizure, if the seizure is indeed earlier. But with regard to the demand and the tone, I think Mendenhall is instructive because it says the use of language or the tone of voice. Those two things are different, and the use of language is the demand, a demand or command or order is not converted into a question, which Mendenhall recognizes the tone of voice can be harsh or can be kind, but the tone of voice does not convert the words themselves into something different.
Can you address this issue of what do we do about pulling up the pants? Do we count it or not count it towards reasonable suspicion? And do you have any other authority on further reflection?
With regards to pulling up the pants, the first thing that I would say is that the Fourth Amendment, the difficulty with this is that for the government, I think, is that the Fourth Amendment allows people to keep things private that they want to keep private. And the waste area is private. So to Judge Srinivasan's point, if officers arrive at a location and demand to see something that is, by all accounts, private, and people, I understand young people walk around with their hands sagging, but
That's still a show of authority, not a seizure, correct?
It is a show of authority, but the court is asking whether his reaction to the show of authority can be considered a reaction that is defiant, a reaction that does not have an innocent explanation, a reaction that is obstructive, might not be something that should be considered. That is not the reaction that we have in this case. In this case, we have a reaction that is momentary, brief, that is in the act of complying. Officer doesn't say, I couldn't see. He doesn't say, don't adjust your waist, don't do anything else. There were not very specific instructions that Mr. Gamble failed to obey. There's no testimony that he failed to do something.
So if he had been told, let me see your waist, and he kneeled down to tie his shoe, and in the course of doing that, the officer glimpses an ankle holster or a gun, that could be counted towards, and then he stands back up and lifts his shirt or his jacket. We'd count the viewing of the ankle holster there because that's not part of the submission. That's the way we're supposed to slice the bologna.
I'm not sure that it can be sliced so fine even there, because again, there is not currently a standard for what constitutes non-compliance, I guess. If that were interpreted, if the officer said in those circumstances that was non-compliant to me, there was not some other innocent explanation for him tying his shoe, that might be the district court may be able to find that was non-compliant.
But didn't the district court, the officer testify here, and that was, I think, brought up in earlier questions, that he thought that the pulling up the pants was suspicious and appeared to be concealing because that was done before he showed his waist?
If we're going to be very precise and if we have to home in on exactly what the officer believed, and what the officer could and couldn't see. The officer, I think we also have to be very precise on what the officer said. And the officer did not say that it was non-compliant. He said it seemed strange. That is it. He did not say it was suspicious. He didn't provide, and I don't want to turn too much attention, but pulling up the pants is not something that is inherently suspicious. It's not suspicious in a high crime area. It is not criminal. So
there was a factual finding that it was suspicious and that he was concealing
the waistband. But in order to make that factual finding, or I think I'm not sure that that's a factual finding so much as a legal conclusion, that it amounts to reasonable suspicion. In order to make that legal conclusion, you have to have objective facts. What are the objective facts? It was adjusting the pants was criminal because what? Because there's not a single fact in this record that I identify how adjusting the pants is criminal. It's, we're talking about concealment. And then we're right back to this, this problem with the Fourth Amendment that allows people to conceal. The Fourth Amendment allows people to keep things private that they want to keep private. So that he adjusted his pants on, again, on the way. I mean, this isn't a case of like open defiance, flagrant defiance. It's not a case of Hodari D where the officer says, stop, come here, and the person turns and runs in the opposite direction. This is all within the course, in the course of complying with the officer's command. So there may be cases where there is testimony that adjusting the waist was suspicious because there was something holding the pants down, because in the officer's experience, every time that happens, I find contraband. There is no testimony, there is no evidence of that here. In fact, in this case, the officer says, I hate beating a dead horse, but he provides the explanation that his pants were sagging, so he pulled them up. He provides the innocent explanation himself. Concealment doesn't mean anything.
I mean, you could conceal to say no. The subject could say, you know what I'm doing? I'm concealing my waistband. And you know why I'm concealing my waistband? Because I don't want to show you my waistband.
The client is in when the officer makes a demand without reasonable suspicion. And I think it's incumbent on the government to establish reasonable suspicion before that point. And to the extent that there's a question about that, the government didn't carry its burden.
Sure, there's not additional questions? Okay. Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission.